You know when you find a bee and it's crawling on its last legs?
I always rescue them.
You give it honey. It's the only thing they eat. Makes sense when you think about it.
Isn't it true, though, that a bee in his entire lifetime makes an absolutely tiny amount of honey overall? I mean, just a minute amount of them. Honey. Yeah,
but they're
so you don't have to give much rehabilitating honey to this one bee before the nation, the world, is making a net loss from that bee. It's useless. If you only get one teaspoon of honey from a whole bee's lifetime, and every time we have to get it back on its feet, it takes a teaspoon and a half, suddenly there's no honey at all.
This is more honey than this bee has seen in its life.
Yeah.
You're insulting it,
apart from anything else. It's like showing a very tired mason a whole cathedral.
The economy is, to use the technical term, fucked. So what can we do? This week, Transport Secretary Philip Hammond floated his big idea, drive faster. He suggested putting the speed limit up to 80 miles an hour. Why? Because safety isn't everything and shorter journey times are good for the economy. Of course, if one person is late for a meeting, that's not as bad as someone dying. I'd probably say the same about 300 people being late for meetings. But if 10 million people are late for meetings, maybe it would be better if someone died. Possibly. It depends what the meetings are about. Safety has never been the sole consideration. If it were, we wouldn't have motorways, or cars, or service station pasties, or let footballers use work experience kids as target practice. That would be health and safety gone mad. I mean, if a multi-millionaire superstar footballer can't shoot whoever he likes, then who can? Apart from Colonel Gaddafi. The fact is that politicians have to make life or death decisions all the time, and they can't always come down on the side of life. The NHS isn't a bottomless pit. I wish it were. You could literally shovel the bodies in and be done with it. So what price human safety? Philip Hammond says we need to decide speed limits on a rigorous cost-benefit analysis basis. Great. I love cost-benefit analysis. That's how I got through the bullying. So let's say the cost is journey time and the benefit is fewer deaths. By advocating a higher speed limit, what he's saying is that the value of a human life has fallen. I think this is a very astute observation. After all, there are more people than ever. And there's a shortage of jobs and houses. In a free market, if you have too much of something that you can't use and have nowhere to store, its value inevitably falls. Yet we, because of sentimental ideas of not liking it when mum dies, and really loving our children, and being afraid of death, are artificially inflating the value of a commodity which is in surplus. I agree with Philip Hammond that the sanctity of human life is a gold standard that we can no longer sustain. The latest road death figures are the lowest on record. This is a disgrace. What is this imprudent decline in human tragedy costing our economy? Desperate times call for desperate measures. The Pelasgians, an ancient Greek people, used to sacrifice every 10th child during times of crisis. We just add 10 miles an hour to the speed limit, in the hope that this offering to the god of the hard shoulder will bring prosperity. So unfasten your seatbelts and slam your foot on the accelerator. I'll see you in hell!
Dear Americans, as you know, everyone in Britain knows the Queen, and she's asked me to have a quick word with you on her behalf about her English. By all means, leave the U out of colour if it bothers you. I can quite see that the bit of a car you put stuff in looks more like a trunk than a boot, and that sidewalks are the bit at the side that you walk on. Fine, says the Queen. Help yourself. She couldn't care less. She couldn't care less, though. Not she could care less. That's the one thing she'd really like you to stop saying, because that, as an expression for not or hardly caring, just makes no sense. If you could care less about something, then all you're telling us is that you do care at least a little bit, because you could care less. But if you couldn't care less, look, observe this graph. Here's me on the scale of caring. I'm at zero. Therefore, since negative caring is impossible, or rather is simply caring of another sort, love and hate being different sides of the same coin, etc., etc., I couldn't care less. I could care more, but I couldn't care less. If I could care less, I would have to care at least the smallest possible unit of caring in order to give myself room to care less. I can't care nothing if I could care less. But I might care much more than nothing. I could care anything from here to here. And I could still truthfully claim to be able to care less. I could care less is absolutely useless as an indicator of how much you care, because the only thing it rules out is that you don't care at all, which is exactly what you're trying to convey. So that's the one thing I really want... the Queen really wants you to stop saying.
The feeding of the 5,000, like, it's 5,000 people and there weren't some bread and fish. I reckon that was just about 4,500 people going, what have we got? Bread and fish. I'm all right, thanks. Oh, that's something we want to get home.
It's also the other interesting thing about that story is that out of the 5,000 people, only two of them had thought to bring any food.
Yes.
And so in a way, it's, OK, good miracle, but the other side of it is 4,998 idiots. With no sense of foresight at all. And Jesus doesn't make them learn a lesson from that. It's all fine.
You said this is the Sermon on the Mount. This isn't Glastonbury, you could have said, couldn't
you? But, you know, you used to say, you didn't bring any food? Of course there's not going to be any food. Think about it.
Yeah.
Plan next time. Judea would be better if people planned. But no, it always works out fine. Jesus will magic up some grub. Well, he's going to get crucified one day, and then what are you going to eat?
Yes.
So what would you do with people who are avoiding their tax?
I would kill them. I think the problem here is that we've got... The system used to be that it was illegal, this is still the system, illegal to evade tax.
Yes.
That's agreed, that's illegal.
Yep.
We'll keep that. But this notion of avoiding tax being a sort of incredibly broad grey area is one of the stupidest and most annoying things in the world.
Yep.
Because essentially, on one level, if you make a pension contribution, you'll pay less tax, so you're avoiding tax by doing that. But most people would say, well, that's all right, that's a good, perfectly reasonable bit of avoiding tax. And then a little bit more, you've got what Ed Miliband's family might have been involved in, that, in terms of a house inheritance thing, I've forgotten what it's called, deed of variation. Most people say that's on the ice cream rankings of Lord Fink, that's less than vanilla. That's like unflavoured. But then you've got the vanilla stuff he was doing, moving all the way through to Gary Barlow's sort of evil flavoured ice cream. but there's this huge sort of grey air, 50 Shades of Grey. And
that is not an ice cream you want, as well, is it?
it's flavoured with the semen of a billionaire. So what we're essentially saying is that people sort of get to choose, if they're rich, how much they reckon they ought to pay. Where on this moral scale do they place themselves? What can they square with their greed and their conscience? And that's an insane system, because ultimately that's a tax on conscience. That means the better, more conscience you've got, the better person you are, the more you pay in tax.
Wow.
So we're taxing being nice. Now, any economist will tell you that what you do in government is you tax the things you want to discourage and you don't tax the things you want to encourage. So we tax nicotine because we want to discourage smoking. We tax alcohol, we want to discourage drinking. But we don't tax pension contributions because we want to encourage people to put things into their pensions.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're discouraging people from being nice and having a conscience by taxing it. And that is the most fucking bonkers system that we could possibly have come across.
That is amazing.
Almost everybody thinks that vertical stripes make people look slimmer. In fact, in prisons, sometimes women have asked for vertical rather than horizontal stripes so that they look leaner, or they think they'll look leaner. But it turns out, research from a man called Dr. Peter Thompson of York University has discovered that the large majority think the one in the vertical stripe is larger than the one in the horizontal stripe when they are the same size.
Surely this shows, actually, that it makes no real difference at all. Because what we're determining whether wearing vertical or horizontal stripes makes you look thinner.
Yeah.
And you can't tell by looking. You have to do research. Yes. The difference is so slight, you have to do research with hundreds and hundreds of people. Basically, people look as fat or thin as they are.
I beg to differ.
I have a friend who's quite short, and he likes to wear vertical stripes because they make him look taller.
Only when he's not standing next to anyone. It's not going to make him look taller than a taller man. It's all relative. He'll just say, oh, there's a normal-sized man next to an enormous man. Oh, thank God, he's taking his striped shirt off. It's actually a tiny man next to a normal man.
I've missed your angry logic, David, I have to say.
I think it just alternates, doesn't it? For ages, you think, OK, vertical stripes make people look thinner. Then you say, oh, she's wearing vertical stripes, therefore she must be fatter than she looks. Therefore, you start thinking, oh, she looks fatter because she's wearing vertical stripes. So suddenly, horizontal stripes start making you look thinner because, oh, she must be thin, otherwise she'd never dare wear horizontal stripes. Then they go, oh, no, horizontal stripes make you look thinner. Oh, she must be fat, she's wearing horizontal stripes.
Can I say there used to be a joke in Birmingham?
There used to be a joke in Birmingham. You've done very well out of it, Frank.
I know. I've reworked it in every form. And it used to be, why has the Queen got so many children? Because she's got ER on her knickers. Right? And in Birmingham, that means ER.
If you're watching in Birmingham, that's for you.
I think it's interesting that in Birmingham, people think that the way sex happens is you strip someone down to their knickers and then read the instructions.
She's offering ER.
Yeah,
but why would the Queen be in her pants anyway?
At that point, it's probably clear that she's up.
Hang on, at that point, she would be somewhere in Birmingham with her pants fully exposed. The fact that there's instructions on the pants at that stage, it's not the main thing that's going to tip whoever it is who was going to have a go over the edge. Surely they would have started by saying, why is the Queen in this bar in just her pants?
And someone would get, oh no, let's not do anything. Let's wait to see if there's a message.
All right.
It could be. She could be in a hotel in Birmingham. There could
How would they have got in?
An intruder.
An intruder who then will read the instructions on the pants, Frank.
It's not just reading the instructions, it's reading them out loud and working out what they phonetically mean. Also, in Birmingham, presumably as everywhere else, ER is on every post box and every policeman's, policeman's head. Is this a city where policemen are being repeatedly fucked in the skull by well-meaning strangers?
Because in certain bars on Fridays.
Surely
it's not. Apparently, they just save it for the Queen.
Which is correct of these grocers? It's grocers apostrophe.
One of the requirements of being a sign printing company is having a basic knowledge of where an apostrophe goes.
They know, I'm convinced. All sign writing companies know, for example, how to spell accommodation. They must. I reckon when they say, OK, we're doing a sign for your guest house, would you like our normal service or would you like our deluxe gold five times the price service? Well, we'll check your spelling for you. And everyone goes, no, it's all right, I'm not going to pay five times as much for you to check the spelling. They go, OK. Inevitably, OK, we're gonna paint the word accommodation the way you've put it there, are we? In the knowledge that they'll have to get called back all the sooner when the people finally realise they've got it wrong. It's just every time you see accommodation properly painted and misspelt, the sign writer knew. Bloody mind me putting it out there wrong, knowing you'd get a repeat gig all the sooner.
You can see how long he's been looking for a flat.
Huh? Where's Ballyregan raced?
Wimbledon.
Right.
So where does he live?
Wimbledon. There are most of the dogs that run at Wimbledon are trained in Wimbledon.
Right. So he lives at a kennels.
He lives at the Trust House 40. Where do you think he lives?
Dog tracks have adjacent kennels.
They do.
Ballyregan lives in the adjacent kennels.
The trainers live around dog tracks.
Right. So you're in trouble now. David and dog racing, he knows everything about it. Yeah.
If there's one thing I'm going to always beat David on, it's dog racing. What's the dad at Walthamstow with me, would buy?
What?
Run, you little bastard, or I'll shoot you.
How much is it?
The pheasants? There's no bloody pheasants.
I don't understand. Yeah.
We'll never catch the fox at this rate.
What are you talking about? talking about? Pheasants? Dogs? Fox? I mean, what sort of a menagerie do you imagine I would be imagining?
I imagine you imagine...
Yeah, I'm in my castle with 10 different sorts of vaguely posh animal, all fighting each other, then I kill a servant and have sex with the wall. That's your aroma.
That's who you are.
Have sex with what?